Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
I'm Beth Ellicott.
And this is the midweek version of the Fiber Talk podcast that we do twice a week for folks who make art with needle and thread.
Ooh, art making today, huh?
Think about that. Think about that. Tonight we're going to do a stitch and chat. Let's see. This is the 29th, so it'll just be Beth and me because I think Jennifer unavailable yet. Yep. We'll snag her next week. I'm disappointed because I want an update on the Tamari ball, the soccer-sized Tamari ball.
Yes, I want to see that.
Man, I got to pull the trigger on one of these days because they are the coolest thing on the planet.
See, I like how they look. I just know I don't want a stitch pump. Yeah. Every now and then you have to be honest with yourself. It's like, I know I won't stitch that.
Yeah. Well, and then, you know, Jennifer set a rather high bar here, so.
No.
Yeah. Well, anyway, we'll catch Jennifer the next week. Yep. Sunday, Carol Cook from Canberra, Australia, will be our guest, and she has a new book called Improv Embroidery. I have to say, now we both read the book, have to say, this is a different kind of needlework book. I really enjoyed it. It's it got the wheels spinning is what it did.
Mm-hmm. It made me think, okay, what can I do? What do I have around my house that I can start working on? Just lots of great ideas in that book. Looking forward to that interview.
Yeah, because the key word is improv. She will, we'll talk about it Sunday, but yeah, she gets you thinking in ways. This is a project book. But it's not a project book where you print something out and here's your colors and you go get it.
Right.
Yeah, it's and she really has so many things in there. I was making so many notes. She just has such a perspective and she's thought it through and little quotes that expand on this please. So yeah, Carol Cook from Australia. That'll be Sunday, so that'll be good. Always fun to set up a show with someone from Australia because we'll record it. We're recording it Thursday night at 7:00. Well, that's Friday morning at like 10 or 11, depending on where they are in Australia. And so you have to be so careful when you're setting it up because the last thing you want to do is sign on and they've been on an hour early or it's really the next day and, it's always a challenge to make sure you get that just right. I quadruple check those times and dates just to be careful. Makes it easy though, because for them, it's the middle of the day. We have to do it because normally we would record during the day. So we have to record in the evening and it's easy for them. Where like if it's somebody in Europe, then we record in the morning. So we snag them at the end of the business day. So yeah. Yep. We get them. We get them.
Right.
So that'll be Sunday. We have that. Then we have the Mystery in Saint-Tropez, the Gay Ann Rogers project that we are doing with Gay Ann Rogers and Kathy Ray. And that project sponsored by Needle and Haystack. And so appreciate folks supporting Needle and Haystack, Kathy Ray, needlestack.com. So we did two shows last Wednesday was with Gay Ann Rogers. And then last Wednesday night in the Stitch Hour, Gay Ann and Kathy joined us.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we've done other projects, so I'm pretty pumped up about this one.
Have you finally decided what colors you're using?
I have decided that I am going to go with the Congress Cloth colorway, probably the A122. And most likely with, it looks like it's a purple Averisoire. I think that's the one I'm going to go with. But Kathy said end of this week she should have those posted so we can see what the Congress cloth options are. Because there's, what, 8 or more on 18 count. Yeah, so you can get those ordered now, but the Congress cloth toward the end of the month, Because I want to stitch on Congress cloth linen like she has. I think that would be fun.
I think so, too. That looked like an interesting ground cloth.
Yeah.
I've never seen that before.
And then she had that thread that was off-white, white, cream, ecru, over dye. And I want to see what she does with that. But so she said she'd have it all up by the end of the week. She's running a store, so we have to be patient.
Just other people to deal with besides just us.
Yeah. Yeah, this little project is not going to pay all the bills in the month. I guarantee you that. So, and she's also working with Rainbow Gallery, so she has to learn from them what they can provide and what they can't, because she doesn't want to put together a package and then Rainbow Gallery says, sorry, can't do it. So,
yeah.
So she's working on it. End of the week, we should have that up. But, yeah, so that's what I'm shooting for, but I want to see that off-white one to see what she does with that. So which one did you choose? Have you selected?
Well, I sent her a note, and I said I really was serious about her picking the least favorite colorway that was being pulled. And right now she said it was orange. So I said, that sounds fine. I think I would want a black canvas. Or isn't there like a chartreuse or a green canvas? I thought there was.
Yeah,
I'm not
there
sure.
Is. Sure.
And I thought, oh, now that would be poison, though. You know, if you had a green canvas in the background with all that orange. But my mind is kind of thinking. And then Gay Ann said, oh, the orange one, she would put a pumpkin in the middle. And I thought, well, there's an idea. I don't have to do the center the same as everybody else. I could stitch a little pumpkin in the middle. So anyway, we'll see. Right now it's orange.
Okay. Because, see, I like the orange ones. The yellow ones, the butter, whatever it is.
Yes.
That's where I would go if she hadn't shown up with the Congress cloth. I just want to stitch on that cloth is really what it is. I would have gone with that. But now the orange ones I really like because she's got in one of them, she has some really nice fall colors.
Mm-hmm.
But I was trying to think, all right, how can you get a cornucopia of some kind in there or some kind of a fall thing rather than go right to Halloween?
Well, and the other thing, well, then if you wanted to do just fall, it depends on which colorway comes back. I think if it's there's one that just screams to me Halloween. And every time I look at it, I think Halloween. But if it's the other one, you could put a leaf in the center, like a fall leaf.
Yeah.
And I mean, just to change it up a bit.
Right.
Or just the other thing I was thinking is on any of these colorways, let's say you get them and you get them in and you're like, well, it needs something. Pulling a pearl cotton, you can go to any of the big box stores if you don't have a local needlework store and pull a black or a really dark shade of color or a really light shade of color and adding that little bit of contrast to what Kathy's already picked might make it really pop.
Yeah.
And so it's just another way to add, and that's probably, if I had picked my just any colorway, I would probably pick the red or the purple and then gone and picked, if I picked the red one, I would have pulled a purple to add into it, or if I picked the purple one, I would have added red to it.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, hey, I think I'm doing orange. I think I'm doing orange.
Okay. See, I was really glad in the orange ones, because they're obviously a fall, Halloween. I was really glad she didn't drop a black in, because to me, I'm just not a Halloween fan, but I love fall colors. I love,
right.
You know, to me that there's a palette there that is so pleasing all the time. And so I was glad she didn't drop a black in and just go full metal Halloween. But then,
right.
You know, Gay Ann mentions first thing I'd put a black in there. Well, I think I'd go with a darker color or dark brown or something.
And you could do that. It depends on what you know, a lot of people like Halloween.
Yeah.
So, and it's one of the few times you really get to stitch or fall and you get to stitch with orange. I like the color orange, but most people don't stitch with it because it does scream to you Halloween or fall, and you kind of got to play with it a little bit. It's kind of a loud color anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty hard to keep your mind from going Halloween when you see orange is the dominant color. It really is.
Right. Right.
So
whatever Kathy has picked, it's going to be, it'll be fun. It'll be fun to play with Gayan's design and see where you go, where I go with it. And I think, you know, I will probably, because I'm going to be playing with the colors a little bit, I'll probably pull out a doodle cloth. Or Gayan suggested you doing one color, doing one quadrant, and then doing a different quadrant and another way, and doing your doodling right on the canvas.
Yeah. No, I think I'm going to get extra of the Congress cloth, and I'm going to do, as Gayan talked about, I'm going to stitch the different quadrants on the doodle cloth and then decide what I like. Mm-hmm. And then put it together on the final piece.
Well,
yeah.
Well, Congress cloth has memory. So
right.
Definitely you, when you rip something like that out, it does, the hole stays in it, and it's very obvious. I mean, you can get away with it with canvas if you're not too rough, but definitely on Congress cloth, you need a doodle cloth.
Yeah, that's why I'll do it separate. And I've got a yard of regular white Congress cloth. I might just take a piece of that and stitch it and do it on that. And then, because mm-hmm. The linen Congress cloth that Kathy has looks like it was an off white, but you can mentally compensate for that too without too much trouble. So,
yeah.
I just love this. I'm excited about this project, especially after we talked about it with Gayan last week, because there's so many different ways that you can learn, depending on your interest and your enthusiasm. There's just so many options, and it's all safe, which, of course, is the goal of the thing. But it's all safe in that you're not going to get yourself in over your head and go, oh, geez, forget it and throw it away. I think it's really a great idea and a great design for just that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it really offers just enough challenge. I mean, like Ian said, if you're a total beginner, you just pick a colorway and stitch it the way in those colors and just go. But if you're more adventurous, you can really play with the design.
Yeah.
And play with the colors, and it just gives you loads of room for learning.
Yep.
I think is.
Yeah, and I looked at the chart because I was going to have a list when we recorded this, so I was looking ahead of time. I was going to list all of the stitches, so people who are wondering what stitches are being used, you know, to give a sense. Well, there's nothing hard at all. Most of it is just slanted straight stitch of one kind or another. And then some over the top, and there's an extended cross stitch, which is, you know, no big deal. And so I didn't even bother listing because I thought I want to list, you know, Walnetto and Jessica, and there's none of that, you know, none of those Gene Hiltons, it's all accomplished with the most simple and basic of stitches that, especially for someone who has never done counted canvas work, and you look at some of the work that people do and you go, oh geez, I couldn't do that, that's too sophisticated. None of that here, none at all. So yeah, no need to fear that.
Right. And that makes it nice. It gives you, because of the stitches themselves are simple, it gives you more permission to play with the color, I think.
Yeah.
It gives that, because if it's complicated, then you're less likely to play with the color. At least I am. This gives you just lots of options. I love it that you can do it three different ways or combine them all, or I don't know. I'm just looking forward to playing with this.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot to it. And that's the, you're exactly right. Cause yeah, you tend to, if you're really locked down with technical stitching, you just tend to not want to be bothered with shifting colors because, all right, if I just want to accomplish this. And this lets you play. It lets you play not only with color but with design. So you can choose a path. Say, all right, I'm just going to figure out what design combination I like that's going to give me the result, and I'll stitch the colors that were put together. Or You can go just color, or you can go both. And, you know, Gayanne, she amazes me because she's going to, you know, when she was talking about getting two colorways from Kathy and combining them.
Mm-hmm.
And when she said that the first time, I don't even get that. What do you mean? And then when she described it on the Stitch Hour last week, the little light went on. It's like, holy smokes, lady.
Right. Right. And I know that if I were picking, if I weren't saying, you know, you pick the color, Kathy, I probably would have picked the red and the purple and tried to combine them somehow.
Yeah.
Or even done the ornament multiple times. Because the ornament's small enough, like she said, that it wouldn't take too long. And you do a few of them and you can do the nun stitch and whip them together. You've got a front and a back that are different. And that would be fun. That in and itself, doing those little ornaments, you know, you're going to learn a lot from doing those. And you can play with color that way. And it's not a huge project, not a huge amount of time, and not a huge amount of material either.
Right.
How big are those ornaments? I can't remember.
I packaged away the chart. I don't have it here, but yeah, they're smaller than the actual project. So yeah, those are, well, right. Gayanne said in 5 hours you could have it stitched and finished. Well, okay, maybe, but, but yeah, no, they're smaller. So they're much more approachable. And then given all the pieces that are provided in the charts, yeah, you could make several ornaments all different without any trouble at all. Yeah.
Right. Right. And that would be fun to do. And again, use it as a challenge. Use it as a way to think about, do I like these colors next to each other? What if I add these colors next to each other? Or, well, she has all the different pathways to choose. So try those on the back of an ornament and see how they work.
Yeah.
It just gives you all sorts of options on playing with the design. And I just love that.
Yep.
I love the challenge of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that a word, do you think, that scares people when you say, when we say we like the challenge of the piece? Does that scare people away?
I wonder. It might. It might. I know it scares when you say, okay, we're going to do this as a challenge. They're like, oh no, I'm not going to do it. You know, because we get stuck in our favorite way to do things, or like our own little wheelhouse. And to step out of that, you know, it's you're supposed to, you know, get out of that doing this thing the same way. You need to challenge yourself. And there's no other, but I think it frightens people. It's that fear of trying something new.
Yeah, because you do it all the time, like you know, the 100-day challenge, and that one you were eating a piece of chocolate every day. And we all know, we saw right through that. Nice try, but
difficult. It was so difficult.
Yeah, yeah, no, that you really need to try harder to hide the obvious. But you know, so like for you, a challenge is a normal thing. You kind of seek them out. For me, I really enjoy pieces that offer up a level of difficulty that maybe I haven't encountered before. But yeah, I mean, there is a lot of people. How about that for grammar?
Perfect.
There are a lot of people that, you know, you start putting that word challenge up and they, no, I just want to pull out a cross stitch chart and make X's and be done. And, and I appreciate that. Yeah, I mean, that's the hobby for a lot of people, but would if we didn't put that word challenge in front, would they be more inclined to give it a whack? I don't know.
I know that I like having the challenge. So if I like cross stitch, and when I'm super stressed, I pull out a cross stitch phase and I make little X's and it makes me happy and whatever. But I like having the stretching myself, and you could look at it that way, you know, the idea of stretching your stitching abilities.
Yeah.
And this piece, especially if you're not comfortable choosing color. This is a great way to do it. Kathy Ray has already picked colors for you. It's not going to be that difficult.
Right.
Just pick the colors you like and stitch it up, and away you go.
Yeah.
You've learned something.
See, that's the thing right there. No, that is exactly the thing. You know, you learn something. And to me, that's part of the hobby. It's part of what makes the hobby dynamic, is you learn something. And if you've never done a counted piece, mm-hmm. you know, this is a perfect way to take a run at it and not invest a lot of money and not invest a lot of time. And you just might enjoy it. You never know.
Right. Because it's so small, it's not like it's going to take you forever to stitch. It just makes it really nice.
Yeah.
Really, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, but yeah, it's, I thought about that often when, you know, we'll describe something, oh, it's got an excellent challenge to it. And yeah, you know, just, I'm out, you know, people just, I'm out. That's it. Nope. But,
then I think you don't grow too. I think that's the deal. I mean,
yeah.
It doesn't have to be a huge challenge, but if you want to grow in your needlework, you do need to take some of those baby steps to learn something new, to grow in an area.
And, right.
And choosing color is always scary for people, I think.
Yeah, but yeah.
It runs into every time.
But I think, you know, if you watch people, floss tube people, you know, or people who just post regularly videos, if you watch them over a long period of time, every now and then, even if they're not inclined to, every now and then they'll kind of take a step out of the comfort zone just to see. And mm-hmm. it'd be interesting to track and see if that, you know, if they go, oh, too much for me, I'm, you know, right back to what I always do. But, you know, and even most designers will take a shot at something different. I mean, Debbie Rowley's got one coming up in the EGA seminar that is really out of character for her. Right. And in terms of the mermaid one, and you look at it, and you go, you wouldn't even know it was Debbie Rowley, but she took a shot. Natalie Dupuis is a classic. She's forever trying something else just to see what happens. And in her hands, usually success, but you see designers do that a lot, even if they're, you know, their standard thing is, you know, they churn them out. Eventually they all take a shot at something different. It's the curiosity thing.
Right. And I think sometimes people are afraid to take that first step. And I think, well, the improv quilting, Carol Cook has talked about that a little bit in her book about,
right.
you know, to take those first steps.
Yep.
And I was talking to a member of my local guild, and we were talking about programs coming up for the next year and how to challenge our members. And she mentioned that ANG had, in their latest needle pointers, someone had basically drawn a canvas, made a line drawing on it, and then handed it to three different stitchers and said, here, do what you want. And it's just intriguing to see the three different designs they had and the challenge that was in them. And we were both excited about that idea. But we also know that there's members in our guild who wouldn't touch this with a 10-foot pole.
So basically, here's a canvas. I draw a shape or something and send it to three people and
right.
say, do what you want within the confines of this and send it back. Let's see what happens.
Correct.
Huh.
Correct. And it was interesting. And then it's basically squares uh-huh. and lines. So nothing hard to compensate, you know, nothing like that.
Right.
On the canvas, that's the one thing that's difficult, is compensating. But just everyone, they just did three beautiful different designs, pulled colors. It was just fantastic. And was fun to see. And I think that's to me, that's a fun way to get out of the box.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but it is hard to go and start with a totally blank canvas, you know, even if you know where the lines are going to be, if you have these lines drawn on, it's like, okay, now what? Cause it's totally white.
Yeah.
What do you do? So, we thought maybe even giving people suggestions. Well, here's three suggestions to put in this box. Try one of these or whatever you want, and kind of giving them a jumping off spot. But we're thinking about doing it as a challenge maybe for next year as a study group.
That's a fun guild. That's a fun guild thing, because you could present that 1 month and people could easily come back the next month and have something to show.
Right, right.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Right, and not have, you know, everyone's would be different. You say, okay, you know, choose your own colors, choose what you have in your stash, and not make it a huge, big canvas either. Make right. it small enough so it's doable. And also for people who have no idea where to start, say, okay, here's three ideas for stitches, or here's stitches that would fit in this long, narrow area. Try these. And give them an idea. And then that would give them a jumping off spot. But yeah, I think it would be fun to do that. So we're thinking about that one.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah. Cause that's the toughest part, is the blank canvas. And Carol Cook talks about that in her book. But, you know, I have to write an editorial in every issue of the magazine I edit. And I hate it. I just hate it. Because I got 500 words, and I have to have something of substance in 500 words. And, I mean, I've been doing this for 45 years, so it's – well, I haven't been – probably 35 that I've been doing it as a chief editor. And, you know, there's a lot of issues – where I sit down and all I've got is that blank sheet on the screen. And, I've had many a time especially early on, where what am I going to put here?
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that I have done, and I think this applies to stitching, anymore I don't have a fear of that. Because if I have nothing, I just start writing, just random thoughts. So I'll just put them down. Sometimes I'll say, all right, I'm going to do an editorial about what's in the issue. That's the ultimate cop out. You know, here's, you know, on page so-and-so, you're going to learn about this. I mean, it's so lame, and it's the ultimate cop out. But if you got nothing, you know, it at least fills the space.
Right.
And I've tried that a ton of times. I've started out just with that approach and never have used it. I shouldn't say never. I think maybe twice. In 35 years, have I actually kept that as the editorial? Because once I got started, then an idea would come to me, and off I'd go on a tangent, and pretty soon I have an editorial. And so anymore, and then the other thing is, I'll just sit down and just start writing. But now I'm smart enough that as I go along, through the days, I'll get press releases and other things. And if something catches my eye, I'll just throw it in a folder on my computer as an idea.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that same approach works for, like, if you sent me a 3x6 rectangle on 18 count canvas and said, here, do something with it. That would be my approach. All right, I'm going to grab this thread here and I'm just going to start stitching in this corner with a stitch that looks interesting. And see what happens. And I'll either rip it out or it'll catch on and I'll have something to go with it. But we're just going to take a run at it and see. And, yeah, you know, fun. To me, that would be fun. Yeah.
Oh, you think that would be fun, Mr. Parr?
I do.
Okay. Well, another friend and I, we're talking about doing a challenge starting in January. We're kind of busy in the summer. 52 weeks of stitches. So over 52 weeks over the year, starting in January, gives you lots of time to prep. we're gonna explore stitches, and we're talking like chain stitch, sort of fly stitch, all those stitches. But what can you do with that? So let's say the first week is the chain stitch. So you go and you do the chain stitch. Well, that gets really, you know, once you got that mastered, what else can you do with the chain stitch? Well, you can add a French knot, you can add a bead, you can do a bullion knot, you can whip it, you can make it go in a circle, you can make it go zigzaggy. That's just the beginning. So you can add a contrasting thread. You can add the same color of thread that makes a difference. You can stack them next to each other, which is also really pretty. Can you weave them together? I wonder if you could do something where you did them stacked next to each other and, you know, they've got those two loops. I wonder if you could weave those two loops together. Ooh, I haven't tried that one.
I bet you could.
Okay. So we're going to do 52 weeks of that. So, she said she did not want a list, that she was just going to explore as she goes. But I think I'm going to make myself a list of stitches, 52 different stitches that I want to explore.
I think that adds to it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that adds to it is if you say, all right, here's my list.
Right.
And this week I'm doing the lazy daisy. The next week I'm doing the stem stitch.
Right.
Yeah. And then, yeah, what do you do with that?
Or even simple running stitch, which, right. you know, you start, you know, you pack them close, you do them far apart, you do them in different directions. And the idea is not, you know, you don't necessarily want to spend hours and hours on this project, but make it kind of like a stitch sampler so that you can go back and you can look at it and say, oh, yeah, that's right. I did this stitch this way and that's how it turned out.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just the idea of challenging oneself with stitches and what to do with them. And just using threads I have. That's the other.
Right.
I have a few.
Yeah, I've heard. I've heard talk. Yeah.
If you've heard, I had a few threads. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's word on the street that you have a bit of a collection. Yes.
just a few threads.
But see, that's the other part of this. Is for anyone who's been around this hobby very long at all, to do something like that, there's no expense.
Mm-hmm.
We all have an extra piece of cloth or a piece that got cut off that we don't know what to do with. We all have threads, various levels. I mean, you know, you're at the pinnacle. We know that. But the rest of us, you know, have a decent collection of just, you know, threads left over from projects or, you know, oh, it's a pretty color and it's a pretty thread. I pick it up and see what I do with it someday. So, yeah, you're not laying out any money. And if nothing else in a situation like that, you're just getting better at stitching stitches. Even if what you get done is a complete visual mess, right. It doesn't matter because you are a better stitcher for it.
And it gives you... Instead of it being like a, well, I'm trying to make this perfect needlework sampler so that, you know, it's just everything is absolutely precise and pristine. The idea is to play with the stitches, and also to have a simple sampler that I can go back and physically look at. Because there are times when I think, I know I did this stitch, did something where I did it in a certain way. Now, where is that piece that I did that on? Because I need it again.
Yeah.
And trying to remember exactly what stitch worked the best in that situation. Sometimes it's nice just to have a sampler made up that you can go back and look at. But yeah, the thing, you could do it on canvas. You know, you could do a bunch of different stitches on a piece of canvas, put a canvas on a, stretcher bars and away you go. Just say, okay, I'm going to play with the Scotch stitch. How many different ways can I do the Scotch stitch? How many different textures can I get in there?
Yeah.
Or the mosaic or, Bargello. Bargello has a ton of different ways to play.
Right. Yep. Or grow the color route. What happens if I start with this color and then put different colors next to it? What happens to them?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Because it makes a huge difference.
Sure. Okay, here's one for you.
Okay.
Chain stitch. Can you weave it? Can you braid it?
Oh.
Could you do that and make it look like a braid? Or would it get too visually too messy? I don't know.
I don't know. Now you got me wondering.
Because you should be able to make it look like a braid, right?
Yes. How do you go over and under?
Right. Exactly. Do you have three chains going at the same time? Or do you put down a base one and then make the other two go over it? I don't know.
I don't know either. Because that would require some mental gymnastics. I think I'd try it first. I think you'd have to almost draw that out.
Yeah.
I'd have to see it.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
I have to drive.
There's one. I'll put that in your head and let you just work on that. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, so, okay. But then that's, you know, does it become a visual mess or does it hold up in that you have, like, you know, I'm just thinking of someone who has long hair that they put in a braided ponytail or whatever you call them. Do you get that effect? Does it hold up or does it become a mess?
Right.
I don't know.
Right. I don't know either.
And then if you can get it to work, then do you go back and weave a silk ribbon through it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or something sparkly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which would give you a contrast if you were using like a, just starting with a floss or a pearl.
Right. Little Krynek.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, you work on that, Beth.
Okay, thanks.
No problem. Get back to me.
Well, and I'm thinking about some of the stuff I did on More Than a Rose, where we used metallic threads, and I practiced them on a doodle cloth on linen with a pearl cotton, because I wasn't going to use the metal threads to practice, you know, because they have their own issues. So when I was just learning the stitch, but it made me think about the plaited braid, which I really enjoyed. And I'm thinking, you know, that was a fun stitch to do. And I think I need to play with that stitch even in more, because I thought it looked great in the pearl cotton.
Yeah.
But I think that stitch, because it's thicker. The problem with the daisy is the chain stitches. It's so kind of, I think that it's thin. This is a thicker stitch, and that might weave better. You know, more defined line than the chain.
Yeah.
Now you got my mind going. I have other things to do today.
There's no charge for that. No, I'm happy to provide that. Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to be able to sleep until I go play with this silly thing.
That's good for you.
Yeah, good for my grandma. Mm-hmm.
Yep. So, cool thing, I heard before we started recording this, heard from Nancy Holub of Cyber Stitchers that the show we did on May 1 with Diana Snyder, talking about her Teach Our Youth to Stitch program, that Nancy wrote to me to say that she had been talking with Diane, and EGA has decided to pick that program up and copyright it. And so it will get national exposure through EGA. And apparently our conversation with Diana had something to do with that, with them becoming aware of it and then deciding to make it part of their offerings. But that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think it's great, because I think most people, we want to go out and teach young people how to stitch, but it's like, okay, you have to start from ground one. Okay, you got to pick a design, or how do you start? How do you teach these kids if you don't normally teach children? It's different than teaching adults,
right.
And it's to have those resources of a jumping off point, a place to start. Yep. I'm glad. This is exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty neat. So, and the other part I like about it, not the fact that we were part of a catalyst for that, but EGA reaching out to young people with a formal program to help bring young people into the hobby is, I mean, to me, that's bigger than all of it, because that's the future. So bravo for that. Yep.
Yeah. And we definitely need to get more young people. I mean, young people are interested, I think. And I know I've talked to people who said, well, I taught a group of people, young people, to stitch, and they just loved it. They just couldn't wait for me to come back and teach them more.
Yeah.
And so there's those opportunities to teach, but sometimes it's hard to, you know, where do you start, you know, how to begin? And this is just a great resource. I'm so glad EGA's picking that up.
Yep. And before we started recording this, I went to the EGA site to see if there was anything on there, and I came up dry. But so we may be just at the early stages of them making this decision. But anyway, that's forthcoming, and I'm sure we'll hear more about it. But, yeah, it's fantastic. Yay. And congratulations to Diana Snyder, who put that thing together, and I don't know who else worked with her, but just tolling away quietly there in the Northeast, and then now something is coming of it that will help future stitchers. So bravo for that. Yep.
Yep.
Yep. And then you were telling me you were drooling over a yet another book that Mary Corbett has been talking about. You need to buy more books, Beth.
No, all the time. So I can't pronounce this, but it's the Reticello book. It's book three, and I can't pronounce her name. Juliana Bonapadre, we're going to guess. But it's in, it's a white work technique that I've been attempting to learn and failing miserably at. So I thought, oh, I need another book. It'll help.
Yeah, but yeah, that solves all problems. Buy another book.
Yes, absolutely. If I practiced the technique when I could just have another book laying around. But this book has great instructions in it. This is the beginner's one. I think there's more advanced that have colors and leaves. And they were on Mary Corbett's site. I don't know if she still has any, because she's been selling out, of course, because she's Mary Corbett with one T.
Right.
No,
yeah,
two.
Think about if she had two T's on her name, how fast she'd sell stuff. Wow.
No, I know. It would be crazy.
Yeah. So this is book three of from the same author.
Right. There's tons of them. So if you look at Mary Corbett's site, I'm looking for it. It's she had several of them listed, but it has, I have it physically in my hands here, and it shows you step by step how to do reticella, how to set up, well, maybe not setting up the linen, but how to set up the square, like how to cut things out, because it's a cut work, well, not a cut work, it's not, is it drawn thread? Did you withdraw the threads?
I think, yeah, I shouldn't say. But it's Italian, right? Isn't that its origin?
Right, it's Italian. So it has three different languages in here, but it is in English, and the English is very readable. And it just kind of walks you through how to do this technique from, because you have to do a buttonhole stitch on the edge. You have to cut things out, kind of like hard anger, but just how to do each of the stitches. But what I like about it is that it has some very clear instructions on how to do the lacy fillings that are in there.
Yeah.
And that I was having problems with.
Oh, okay. So you're hoping that a different approach will help you over the hump then?
Yes. Yes. And it's very much step by step, and the illustrations are very well done.
Yeah.
I'm just, it's beautiful. So I'm kind of curious to know what the other books inside of the other books look like. Because, you know, Mary has beautiful books on her website.
Yeah, Mary is developing quite a treasure trove of books that you can buy from her website. She's getting to be almost a go-to resource for needlework books, good ones, you know, ones that that you want to own. All right, here's a question for you. Now, you do all kinds of techniques. I do all kinds of techniques. If you were to say where your stitching is headed, like if there's a direction, or maybe the question is, do you have a direction? Like you think your stitching is heading more towards surface embroidery or canvas work, or what would you say?
I don't think it. I tend to get excited about something and work in that direction for a while. And then I'm like, something else distracts me, and then I go in another direction. So I love canvas work, and I'm always looking for a canvas piece or working on a canvas piece, no matter what. I have to have one going. And then, but like now, I'd like to get better at doing some of the it's surface design, but more like the stump work. And I think that's what calls to me about the reticella, is that it is needle lace. You are weaving things in, and that's very stump work. Is needle lace. A lot of it is needle lace. You're just using kind of different materials, or around a wire. So that's why I want to get better at it, because it intrigues me.
Yeah.
But one thing, no, not one thing. Oh, horrors.
No, but I guess it's more, do you lean in a direction? Do you lean more toward a canvas type projects? Do you lean more toward a surface project? I mean, cross stitch always part of the mix, but there's just a limit to how, you know, at some point it's X's on linen. And follow the chart and blah blah blah. So you know, or is it a white work thing? You know, is there a way that you feel yourself being pulled, or is it just the mix that makes it work for you?
I think it's just the mix. And the only thing is, I've noticed the one thing that almost always gets me like excited or really intrigued into a piece is that if it's a shape, like, so you can make it into a shape.
3D.
Right. So even like Gayan's will have needle cases occasionally on her sale. I love her needle cases because you assemble those things yourself. You don't need to send them off. She gives you instructions on how to finish them.
Yeah.
So that's nice. But so the, Jen Aiden Christie has that owl.
Yeah, that.
And I've looked closely at those photos, and it looks like it's needle lace, and it's on a form, and it's like, and I think, I don't really care for owls. I mean, owls are fine. They're fine. They're birds. They're fine. But it's like, why is this making me so excited? It's because, how did she do that? You know, and I think that's what grabs me about 3D objects and about finishing them, is how did she do that? How did that get accomplished?
Yeah.
And I think that's why the stump work appeals to me too, is because it is more 3D, and so is needle lace, because it's generally it has a texture to it more than just making X's, you know, making X's on cross stitch. It's even if it's in the cut work piece, it is much more textured than just a cross stitch.
Right. So. Yeah. Okay. I'm just curious. Because for me, I'm pretty much in the same boat, but I have this nagging frustration in that I would like to start doing surface embroidery much beyond the dabbling that I've done. I would like to. I have several books. I mean, I have several Trish Burr books, and then some others. And I look at them, and I, you know, and you look at Inspirations magazine every issue, and I would like to dig in enough and get skilled enough so that I could execute some of those things. And I don't know why I don't pull the trigger on that, because I have all the materials. It's not like I don't have the materials right here at my fingertips. I've purchased the linen, the muslin and ground cloth, whatever you want to call it. I have the threads, I have the needles. That's one that just nags at me. You know, why don't you take a run at that? And I have some, but I just like to do that more. But then, you know, then along will come the mystery in Saint Tropez, Gay Ann Rogers thing. It's like, oh, that can wait. I'm going to work on this, you know.
And I think sometimes, okay, I've been thinking a lot about that. Why do I start cross stitch pieces rather than work on my big stump work camp casket? And I think there's a little bit of fear there for me. It's, you know, the fear of failure. I know I can make little X's. Sometimes I mess up on the chart, but I know how to fudge those now. I can get anything. I can get it to work. It'll work.
Yeah.
So there's that underlying some of my inability to start my casket is fear. Is the fear, well, you know, I might make a huge mistake, and well, it's easier just to make little X's. Let's go back to making little X's.
Safe. And yeah, it's safe.
Yep. Safe. It is safe. It is safe. So, you know, to get out of that box of playing it safe, you know, I think sometimes you just got to jump in. We've got to get our slate frame set up.
Yeah. Well, that's the other part. See, there's always some little hump that I need to get over, and the slate frame is one of them. Mm-hmm. To finish setting that up, I was charging right ahead on that. And, there's another one, and I've got two or three goldwork projects. I've got a Natalie Dupuy goldwork project I'd love to do, but I know I got to be able to set up a slate frame and get that to work perfectly. And so then that becomes another project. And sometimes I think that trying to do different things, while I believe it is a good thing because that makes you a better stitcher overall, I think sometimes gets in the way because it introduces these little side hassles like setting up a slate frame or any number of things, you know, surface embroidery or if you want to do stump work, you know, that introduces wires and those kinds of things that you keep having to jump over little hurdles before you get to the actual stitching.
Right. I'd much rather stitch.
Yeah. And I think that's sometimes why you just fall back on the cross stitch because pull it out, throw it in a hoop, go.
Right.
And yeah. And it is a comfort zone. Can't screw it up unless you're just nodding off after every other stitch. You just can't screw it up. And right. It's just an interesting dynamic yet. You know, and yeah, comfort zone with cross stitch or basic needlepoint stuff. And then how do you break out and how do you stay broken out?
You're right. And I think sometimes we allow ourselves to get busy with the things that, you know, the simpler projects instead of doing the ones that really, we really want to get done.
Yeah.
Because we let all the fear factors or all the little things that we have to do to get ready for that project, we'd say, well, maybe I'll just put that off for a little longer.
Yeah.
Find an excuse. And I think sometimes you just have to say, okay, I'm just going to bite the bullet and do it.
Yep. Yeah. Make yourself, everything else goes in a drawer. This is the only project available to me. Let's go.
Let's go. Let's do it. Yeah. Let's just.
But we're humans, and then there's always that shiny object problem. So,
right. Yeah. And I think too, for me, I do like to have things eventually I like to complete things. I mean, I just started.
That's just crazy talk. I just don't even hear that.
La, 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 la. But so I'm right now I'm trying to get some things cleared off before we start the game project, because I do. It's like, okay, I just cannot start a project until something's done. So I'm working on Purple Mountain Majesty because the heart, because I thought, okay, I could probably get that done in July if I just buckled down and worked on it.
Yep.
It's a small piece. It wouldn't take me too long. And then that would be done. And I read somewhere an article that if you have too many unfinished objects, that even though you don't think they're bothering you, they're kind of floating in the back of your head. And so when you get them finished, it kind of gets them out of your head.
Really?
Yes. And I thought that was an interesting point, because I do know that to be true for me, that I have several unfinished objects in my basement that they come back. I look at them and I think, I really should finish that. I really should pull that out and finish that.
So it's like that's a slot in your brain. And if you finish it, then that opens up.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure I have that problem, but I certainly have the unfinished projects. I have to think that through. That's interesting. Yeah, if I finished one, would I feel a moment of freedom?
Right.
Hmm. Okay.
And when people finish a project, a lot of times they'll immediately start a new one, because it's kind of cleared that little space out. And they're like, yeah. Oh, I can start a new project.
When you really should move on to the next unfinished one. Oh, no, not that.
Yeah, I don't want to work on that one. I want something new.
Yeah. I don't know. We're not going to solve it, but it's something to think about anyway.
Yeah.
Yep. All right, tonight, Stitch and Chat, join us. We'll have fun. There'll be some giveaways. Sunday, Carol Cook. And then get to GayAnnRogers.com. And it's right there on the right-hand side of the homepage. You can see the Saint-Tropez thing, and it'll take you to a page, and then it'll take you to Kathy Ray and Needle in a Haystack for the various things. And so get those ordered up if you're interested in doing the project with us. And really appreciate Kathy and Needle in a Haystack sponsoring this project. And then we're going to get this started once we get materials in hand. We're going to get this started. And then we've been talking about just having some spontaneous live video shows, not announced, not planned, but just show up that where we'll stitch and show what we're doing. And then you can watch them after the fact. But just as a way to keep this project going and show what each of us is doing. So because Jennifer, Beth, and I are all going to use one of Kathy's things, and then Cindy is stitching it. But she's doing it out of stash. So that will be interesting in its own right as a contrast to what we're doing. So, yeah.
Yeah, it'll be fun to see what she comes up with. She's so creative anyway, so.
Yeah, she has that problem. Yep. All right, that's going to be it. See you tonight at 8 o'clock Eastern for the Stitch Hour, and then be sure and catch Carol Cook on Sunday. We talk about her art, and her new book, Improv Embroidery. Thanks for listening.
Bye.